Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Coming from the heart of Los Angeles, where the Clippers return to action, tomorrow night? Doyers, Angels, no Lakers. Maybe that's why the playoff ratings are down in the NBA. Speaking of NBA, that's where I want to start. Sam Amick's going to join us, NBA insider from The Athletic. We'll get his thoughts on a new story about the 76ers and the dysfunction within that franchise. We'll get his reaction to last night's games and his thoughts on the Lakers' future. Sam Amick, 15 minutes away. Joel Klatt will join us next hour. Of course, lead college football analyst, also a draft analyst and a former quarterback in his own right. And you can hear him on Fox Sports Radio's draft coverage. We have an unbelievable radio show. I have told you before that there is one guy above all others as NFL insiders. It doesn't mean Jason Lock-Infora will join us periodically from CBS. We have other NFL insiders. But there's one guy who, if he drops a nugget, you're like, okay, that seems like it's more valuable information than other people. Right? That's Jay Glazer. Jay Glazer dropped a little nugget about Odell Beckham Jr. He thought he'd be moved. Sure enough, Odell Beckham Jr. was in fact moved. So you got Jay Glazer and Joel Klatt and Chris Spielman and Rob Stone all on one radio show draft night. All the insight that you could possibly desire. And Joel Klatt will share with us his thoughts on the NFL draft about an hour from now. Scott McLuhan, of course, who's drafted, former NFL GM, and he's an advisor to many in the National Football League. He's going to join us. Last year, this time, he's like, Baker Mayfield should be the number one overall pick. I thought it midseason, and sure enough, it came to fruition. And Enes Kanter, who's joined us before, of course, had a tremendous series thus far for the Blazers going against one of his old teams, the Oklahoma City Thunder. So we have a loaded show for you. We appreciate you making us part of your day. Let me start with last night, where Kyrie Irving went off for the Boston Celtics. This game was close, three-point game late. Indiana got too cute, and the Celtics survive. But if you watched last night's game, you're like, that dude's a cheat code. It's unfair how nasty Kyrie Irving is. And so quickly we forget, though LeBron was incredible in their NBA Finals run where they came from three games to one down, the guy who was equally incredible and actually made the game-winning plays and shots at the offensive end was Kyrie Irving. Okay, it's not to nullify or negate in any way the greatness of LeBron James, but whether he's Batman and Robin or a dynamic tandem that's on more even footing, like Kyrie Irving can hoop. And as much as people want to say, well, you know, the Celtics last year won without them, did they? The East was booty. Everybody knows that. The team with the best record in the East, the Celtics didn't have to play. They had to go seven games just to beat the Milwaukee Bucks in the first round. And while Jason Tatum's going to be a very good player, he is not a great player yet. While Jaylen Brown is going to be a very good player, he is not a great player yet. Al Horford is a great blend player, not a superstar. Like, kind of go through their roster and like, wait, they need somebody who can go get them a bucket, and that's what Kyrie Irving is. But whether it's us in the media, and I don't do that thing that some radio guys and TV guys do where they say, you know, the media, I'm part of the media. I get to eat those horrible pre- and post-game meals and ask terrible questions before, after, and sometimes at halftime of games. I'm a member of the media, but the media, we set this narrative as, well, maybe he's not that important. Because you have a lot of people who talk about basketball who don't actually know anything about basketball. They do. They've just been talking about basketball long enough long enough so that they convince you that they know the sport and maybe may cover the sport. And I'm not saying I know everything, but all you have to do is, one, take my word for it. I got a pretty high basketball IQ. Two, the people I talk to. And three, just look at when Kyrie Irving was traded from the Cleveland Cavaliers. Yes, Isaiah Thomas was coming off injury, but he was just one of three players that was dealt in return for Kyrie Irving. The point is, it's not just about matching up salaries. It's that he was seen as valuable. It was seen as a fair trade to trade 2.5 starters for one player. That's how good he is. And so whether it's us in the media with our narratives, or it's people with their speculation about what he wants to do next, or whether it's his own misuse of social media at times, just saying dumb stuff, we get so far afield from the fact that that dude is awesome at basketball. I mean, in many ways, you relate it to Kevin Durant. Yesterday, we played for you Kevin Durant, thoroughly convincing you that he's doing the right thing in what Nick Wright called being passive. He's just saying, I'm reacting to the defense. Yeah, they got a little dude under me. And I could make, what'd he say, about 43% of my shots? Plus, there's another dude in help, and oftentimes another dude in help. This is how we were playing the second, the last month of the season. It was really successful for us. This is how we'll continue to play. Take what the defense gives you is what they tell you in basketball. Same thing in football. Take what the defense gives you. And that's what he's doing. But because Kevin Durant had burner accounts, because he left Oklahoma City and people are in their feelings, because he said some weird stuff and reacted in a defensive way, we get away from the fact that it's a two-time finals MVP. He's a former NBA MVP who could have won it any of these years. He's 7 feet tall with a virtually unguardable fadeaway jump shot. And he's shown he could come through in the clutch, and he plays both ends of the floor. And if you listen to him about why he's playing, how he's playing, you can tell he has an incredibly high basketball IQ. But people will hate on him. People will diminish him. They'll say Steph's the more important or the better player or whatever they want to say. And it gets us lost in just how special he is. Don't believe me? Here's a former tremendous player in the NBA and an NBA analyst. Greg Anthony was on with Dan Patrick earlier today. He had this to say about Kyrie.
I think that shows you more the issue from the Pacers' standpoint, not having that one truly great player. In their case, would be Oladipo. And I think that's the difference. You saw it last night where Kyrie's ability to score against great defense. Systems are really wonderful in the regular season when you don't have time to prepare. But when you get in the postseason and we're focused on one team and we can make adjustments from game to game, the one thing you struggle to adjust to is great players.
We have better players than you do. There's a reason that the great players in the NBA played in more conference and NBA finals, because that usually becomes the determining factor. Which, by the way, is why I've always struggled with people saying how great Tracy McGrady was. Right? Like, he didn't win a playoff series. Well, he didn't. Yao Ming was hurt a couple of years. And, like, dude, I'm not holding you to say, I didn't say you had to win NBA championships. I didn't say you always had to get to conference finals. I get this, but you couldn't win a series? Whereas Kyrie Irving, with a team that, you know, doesn't have one of their starting guards, playing against a well-coached, tough-minded Pacer team that's down their best player. At the end of the day, the difference between the two teams is one team has Kyrie Irving and one team does not. But because of social media, his own mishandling of the media, our media need to create a narrative. Like, look, I look at things maybe the exact opposite of people. The New York Knicks haven't won a championship since 1973. Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant are so good that if they team up together, most people, myself included, would say there's a strong likelihood they play for a championship within the first 2 years. That just, only to me, that's how good they are. The reason everybody wants these guys is how good they are. Does he struggle with leadership and what to say and how to act and how he's viewed? Sure. But you know what he doesn't struggle with? Hey, man, we need a basket right now. Can you do that for us? That they can both do.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's check in with Sam Amick, who, of course, writes for The Athletic, covers the NBA, has done so for years. What do you make of some of the negative stories and some of the weird aspects of the Philadelphia 76ers?
Doug, appreciate you having me as always. That's the first I've heard of that story, to be honest with you. I would say that even without knowing that information or that report, you know, there was certainly a growing indication that if the Sixers ended up getting bounced here and not even coming close to matching their own expectations, which are pretty grand. When you talk about Josh Harris and that group and what they want to accomplish, they went all in by getting Jimmy Butler. They went all in by getting Tobias Harris. You know, the coaching aspect of that whole story, you know, again, without that report, was already very real. The idea that Brett Brown could be in trouble, the idea that even with Monty Williams being, you know, a very coveted guy on the coaching circle right now, the idea that they end up kind of finding a way to hold on to Monty if they're going to fire Brett, you know, that's the way I saw that going in. This doesn't help. Even if there are some discrepancies in the reporting, I think what it reveals is some of the inner workings that are problematic. Ben Simmons in particular is a guy who some people within that organization find to be, you know, a lot to handle and a lot of personality in that room between him and Joel and Jimmy and the rest of them. So, a lot for Brett to navigate, for sure.
You know, it's interesting. Let's start with the Simmons part. How much have you've hung out? I know you have the Stephen Adams files, conversations with the NBA's most interesting man. And I do know Stephen Adams is not Australian. He's from New Zealand, right? He's a Kiwi.
Correct.
And he's one of 18. He has 17 siblings, I think. I mean, which just,
yep.
And he's not the biggest. That's the other part that's crazy. I want to see the biggest. Anyway. But while New Zealanders are not exactly like Aussies, you've also been able to deal with Aussies. And
sure.
I know this is stereotyping, okay? But generally, every Aussie I've ever been around in basketball, and I have friends that have played in Australia, they all basically say Aussies are the greatest teammates. They're tougher than nails. They all shoot and pass the basketball well. They play for each other. They're really competitive. Then afterwards, they all want to, hey, mate, come get a beer with us, right? Like, they just have a good time. Is that a fair depiction of most Australian basketball players you come upon?
Yeah, I mean, we probably shouldn't paint too broad a brush, but yes, you think about the Andrew Bogut's of the world and the combination of grittiness and selflessness. I think that is definitely a thread.
Okay, and there's some sort of break between the Aussies and Ben Simmons, and I know he went to high school and played college here for a bit, but he's still Australian, and that always perked up my attention as to what could it be. What is it about Ben Simmons that, as you point out, say makes him a little bit more to handle, other than just he's got to become a better shooter?
To be fair, honestly, I'm going to flip that on its head a little bit. I think if you were asking Ben, he would say, "Well, wait a minute, it starts with Joel, and then it got compounded by Jimmy, and then I feel like what has happened is." Because, you know, Ben's side of it is, all right, rookie of the year, supposed franchise centerpiece by himself for a little bit of a time when Joel was hurt, you know, the excitement was about Ben. And now it's like a little bit of a fall from grace. And now there's only so much oxygen in that room. And you have two guys in Joel and Jimmy who, listen, in terms of media, color, and candor, and, you know, that aspect of what we do, these guys are gold. They're great quotes. They're fascinating. They're divisive. That's kind of what we want. That's what we enjoy writing about, talking about. But to be Ben Simmons and to try to carve out your space in that room, and then you look and, you know, Joel has a fairly large group around him that kind of requires resources from the team. Same thing with Jimmy to an extent. And then the word a couple months ago with Ben is that it was kind of going that direction. It feels like these guys are a little too worried about carving out their lane within the context of a locker room than it is, you know, really finding each other together and doing it collectively.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Sam Amick. I understand that the Pacers are without Victor Oladipo and that was actually a game in which they almost stole yesterday. But I watch and I realize that there's some leadership aspects that Kyrie Irving has to learn. But some of this stuff, does it get us too far afield from the fact that he's as dynamic a scorer as the league has had and maybe will have? Like, it almost feels like it takes us with him. Oh, yeah, he's awesome. I forgot how awesome he was.
For sure. That was fun to watch. I want to say, who was on that call? Was it Reggie Miller in terms of the former player? Do you remember from last night? Whoever it was, they were talking about his handle, and they brought up the idea that, you know, said, I think Kevin Harlan said, you know, is it the best handle in the NBA? And then, the feedback was, you know, maybe of all time. And this dude, what he does with the ball is magician stuff. What he does with step backs is incredible. What he does getting guys on skates is fun to watch. So he's still, to an extent, underappreciated. Part of it is that, you know, he just has had to find his way in that really interesting Celtics landscape when it comes to just all the talent they have. But you saw it last night. I mean, that's why all around the league, even with all their roller coaster up and down this season, nobody was willing, that I came across, to actually give up on the Celtics. And I think right now you're seeing why.
You mentioned Monty Williams. Supposedly the Lakers have interviewed him. They're going to talk to Ty Lue as well. It does feel like cart ahead of horse, though, right? Like, Magic pulled the ripcord and he parachuted out. Shouldn't they go president first, coach second?
They should. I mean, it is interesting in Lakerland right now. I don't know what to make of it. You know, I wrote something today that was not intended to be about the Lakers, but talking to Jerry West about the Clippers, and then that led to the Lakers, and an idea that had been floating around about Jerry maybe going back to the Lakers and taking a respected GM with him to work with his son, Ryan West, who works for the Lakers, has been there for a decade. But there's all these different, you know, high-level possibilities that would probably be there as options for Jeannie Buss. But, you know, one thing, I guarantee you there's a lot more going on behind, you know, the doors of her office than we're aware of right now. Everything I hear is that while it appears that Rob Pelinka is 100% running the show and he's got control of that steering wheel, that, you know, they are kind of making the rounds at a very high level to consider team president options. I just don't know who that might be, and if they might, you know, like, their bar is so high that it seems conceivable that they might swing and miss on every single, you know, every single one. So that, as it relates to the coaching situation, is problematic, because it is, you know, it is backwards to go ahead and bring the coach in and then kind of force feed that upon the new president. So, you know, I don't know where we're going to be looking at this thing in 3 to 4 weeks, but it's a weird time right now.
Yeah, but what's amazing about it is, it's like, okay, wait, is Pelinka trying to get a guy in there because that makes it harder for them to find a president? Because if you bring in a president, then Pelinka could be the guy left without a chair when the music stops playing, right? Like, that's
100%. Yeah, and there's a lot of people who I've talked to who would take that job in a heartbeat, and the first move they would make is to get rid of Rob. So he's smart enough to know that, you know, that he's going to find an ally here. And I don't know who that might be, but yeah, that is a thing. And so it's, if you're Jeannie, it's like, you know, the shop needs to stay open. So Rob's got to run it. They have work to do, and they, you know, they got a draft coming up, all the stuff that comes with running an NBA team. But man, it's an interesting landscape.
What do we make of the fact that the one president that was out there who had worked with them before in Cleveland chose to go to New Orleans instead of even talking to the LA Lakers? Like, is that a sign of the stay away, this thing is toxic?
I would go the other way. And since I know for a fact that the Lakers did not reach out at all to Dave Griffin, that I would say that it probably illuminates that bar that I mentioned and how high it is. Cause if Dave Griffin's not clearing your bar, that's pretty wild. But I think, you know, because it's the Lakers, because of the power of that brand, or at least the perceived power of that brand, that, you know, they are shooting, you know, even higher than that. So, I mean, they did not make any attempt to try to make Dave part of their program.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. It's the voice of Sam Amick. Obviously, everyone around the league has been impressed with what the Clippers have done to kind of build this blue-collar, like, you know, even after trading Tobias Harris, they still kind of made the playoffs. And we shouldn't get away from the fact that they were down 31 before they made this incredible comeback. They've done that kind of before during the season, but they were down 31. What do you think of the Warriors moving forward? They've shown you can be physical with them, and now they don't have DeMarcus Cousins, and whether or not that made them better or made them kind of just different, not having him means more Kevon Looney, more going to that bench early. What do we think of the Warriors now?
It's funny. I was sneaking in a little elliptical time before you called, and I was trying to watch the game again and really go back and understand what happened. I mean, for one, I'm watching this thing thinking about Kevin Durant, and then in this instance, I do not blame him at all for being a little frustrated that he became the one and only GOAT in this situation, that he was the only guy who was to blame for what happened because Pat Beverly got under his skin and he had 9 turnovers. And those are all very real things. But my gosh, you go back and you watch from the mid-third quarter on, and specifically the first 6 minutes of the fourth quarter, and I mean, it's Steph Curry throwing the ball away, Steph missing shots, Klay Thompson losing Lou Williams, you know, left and right, guys letting Montrezl Harrell bully him down to the paint, you know, putbacks, offensive boards. They got outworked. And if they keep getting outworked, then they're going to play with fire. I mean, there was a cool moment after game two. I was actually walking out of the locker room with Doc Rivers trying to connect with him for just a minute, and Steve Kerr came over, gave him a big hug, said hello, and he actually made a comment about how he was envious of Doc because of how hard his guys played, which is a hell of a statement considering the roster that Steve has, that he would be envious of the guy on the other side. But there was truth in it because they got outworked, and they have nothing to lose. We all know in pro sports, I mean, that's the best place to be if you're a team. So, you know, I still think the Warriors are going to pull this thing off, but I give the Clippers a ton of credit, and they're going to keep fighting.
How much more of a threat are the Rockets now? Because remember last time they matched up, DeMarcus Cousins was the one who went to work against the Rockets. Do you feel like they've gotten closer to the Warriors?
I'm just going to lean into the prisoner of the moment thing because recency bias is strong. But, I mean, right now, if I was a betting man, and I'm not, I mean, I would be going with the Rockets. The way they're playing and the vibe they have and the story that they are acutely aware of in terms of, you know, how long they've been trying to take bites at the Warriors' apple, how long James Harden has been trying to establish his individual supremacy over Steph Curry or Kevin Durant for that matter, you know, how long Chris Paul has been trying to get into the finals, let alone win a championship, and Father Time, and how, you know, he knows that that clock is ticking. And then all these role players that, you know, credit to Daryl Morey and Gerson Rosas in their front office, they went out and got the Kenneth Faried's, Austin Rivers, you know, Daniel House Jr.'s, all those types of guys to fill in the gaps after they lost key role players last summer. They're in a great place right now. And more importantly, like to your question, they look like a boxer who's just sitting there ready with a knockout punch because they've had enough. So, I mean, they're playing really well.
Yeah, it should be fascinating to watch. Last thing, everyone declaring for the NBA draft, and it's become almost a foregone conclusion that you take Zion Williamson number one overall. But we're seeing the league be dominated by these dynamic ball handlers that control the game, that have a super high usage rating. And you have a Ja Morant, and for a short period of time, they were AAU teammates, right? They're about, you know, that he's got the body type. He creates for himself, for others. He's a freak athlete. He's becoming a better and better shooter. I've talked to people that say, like, look, I'm not sure I don't look long and hard at Ja Morant. Like, the problem is how many seats Zion Williamson is going to sell and how many jerseys he's going to sell. How close have you heard it is between the two in the upcoming draft?
The way you broke that down all makes sense, but I still have yet to run into anybody who indicates that it's not a foregone conclusion that it's Zion. Now, everything, you know, the Ja Morant skill set definitely does apply to today's NBA, you know, in a wonderful way. And you know, and Zion is kind of his own type of thing. I mean, it's part Blake Griffin, you know, part I don't know who else, but I mean, he's a specimen, and he's a guy who will sell tickets and who is going to be explosive and electric and do all those things. But I mean, there are questions about him. I mean, I don't know if you ever saw this. Gilbert Arenas, of all people, had a really fascinating scouting report on Zion that I saw a couple months ago, where he kind of picked his game apart and raised a bunch of red flags about how well he would transition to the NBA. And it all made sense, and it got me thinking. But I still continue to hear that it's Zion. Like I mentioned Jerry West earlier, I saw he did another interview where he compared not drafting Zion to not drafting Michael Jordan, which is about as, you know, hyperbolic as you can get. But, you know, I think he's going to be the guy.
Yeah, I tend to generally agree with you. I will say this, like, Gilbert saying the kid doesn't do, he doesn't come off of pin downs. Like, no, he's going to be the one setting the screen, but he's going to be, he's got him pinned right at the wrong position. But it's not that Gilbert doesn't have a high basketball IQ. He does. It was a little weird in terms of picking apart the things that he doesn't do, but he's not going to be asked to do. Sam Amick,
right.
You can check him out on Twitter @Sam_Amick. or his latest piece in the Athletics, the Stephen Adams Files, conversation with the NBA's most interesting man. Give me one quick story. Give me one Stephen Adams, because there's a million out there. Some are real, some are fake. When somebody dives into this, give me one Stephen Adams story.
Well, my favorite was he mentioned that in the offseason he'll be in New Zealand and Wellington, and he talked about the health benefits of in between having weightlifting workouts in the morning and basketball on-court work in the afternoon, the health benefits of going to the local pub where at noon every single day there's a Guinness waiting for him on the bar. The same bartender knows what he wants. And he says, oh, there's a lot of iron in Guinness, mate. Didn't you know that? And every single day he smashes a Guinness in between his workouts. And then he goes on his way. And I got an open invite to go share a few adult beverages with him at some point. I think that might be one of the most fun assignments I've ever had. I'm going to take him up on that at some point here.
No question. I mean, if you don't want to go, I will do it. Okay? If you don't want to go, I'll do it. And you can steal the byline, and I will do the reporting. Fair enough?
Well, that's fair enough. The best part was, he goes, you better be ready. He goes, me and the boys, it's about 8 pints each. But he had also just told me that he doesn't drink during the season. And I said, well, see, I got a leg up. I'm training for you right now. So, you know,
you're in full condition. Hey, if they get dusted off in this playoffs, 4-1 or get swept, does Billy get fired?
I don't know what will happen, but something will happen. Sam Presti does not sit on his hands. I mean, Billy, I've never heard anyone within the organization do anything but effuse praise for Billy. So it's like there's no smoke on that front. But something has to give. And shoot, I mean, we should learn from the James Harden trade back in 2012. I'm not trying to get aggregated here. This is speculation with no intel at the moment. But, like, you know, Sam's going to look at that roster, too. If you go 2 years in a row with this Russell Westbrook, Paul George core getting no farther than the first round with Stephen Adams as part of that, and something's got to change. I don't know what it's going
to
be.
Shooting. Must add shooting.
Right.
Sam, great stuff. Right. Can't wait to read that piece in The Athletic. Really appreciate you joining us. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Doug. Appreciate it.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
This is a lot like National Signing Day. This feels a lot like National Signing Day, where it matters way more to you about your team than it does the rest of the world. And a lot like National Signing Day, like, you don't really know. And you look at the schedule, you're like, oh, that's going to be a tough game. Like, we have no idea. They still haven't even drafted yet, let alone there's so many injuries, so much change between now and talking about December, and we're in April. I will say this about the Chargers thing. The one I don't like about, I'm a Charger fan, is that they have Monday Night Football against the Chiefs. Like, that's in the game of the year conversation, and it's going to be at 5:30 in Carson. Like, does anyone understand how bad an idea that actually is? No, Carson is not exactly in a metropolis. It's a one town north of or south of Compton, right? It doesn't make it the worst part of the universe. It's not the best, but it's also not where It's not where Charger fans live. It's also not where Chiefs fans live. And as small a stadium as it is, like, you're trying to change that narrative of, because I was there, the Ravens game. It was a Saturday night game against the Ravens late in the season. It was packed, and there's some Raven fans, but it was almost all Charger fans. Like, people are starting to, when you're good, they get behind you. It's LA. That seems like a terrible idea. Let's put arguably the game of the year, a rematch of last year, Monday Night Football, where the Chargers stole the game, but where they play and all that just, there's a lot of other stuff too I don't love.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Joel Klatt is Fox Sports' lead college football analyst. He covers the draft, has done so for years. Last year, of course, covered the draft for Big Fox. This year, we got a great show for you here on Fox Sports Radio. Joel Klatt, Jay Glazer, Chris Spielman, who am I forgetting? Rob Stone will host, okay? So basically, the type of draft crew you normally see on network TV, you will hear on Fox Sports Radio the day of the NFL draft next week, and you kind of have to spend some time with us here on Fox Sports Radio. We're a week away, Joel. Are you comfortable saying Kyler Murray should be the number one overall pick?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. Obviously, there's a lot of rumors right now. And this is the time, I guess I should say, that everyone's trying to make everyone available, right? So I still think he should be the number one pick, and that there's any number of reasons why, one being the fit between he and Cliff Kingsbury is just really good. And to me, fit means more than anything else. I don't think he's the best prospect in the draft. In fact, I would give that moniker to Bosa from Ohio State. Nick Bosa is sensational, but the deal is you've got to have a quarterback, and that quarterback has to fit what your coach wants to do. And it just so happens that the team that has the number one pick, you know, their coach is tailor-made for Kyler Murray. So
I think he should be the pick. This is a question. Why is Kyler Murray a better fit than Josh Rosen? Like, Josh Rosen was supposedly a pro-ready quarterback.
Yeah.
He's really accurate. He's bigger. And, you know, like, look, if from the shotgun, like, why can't he fit in that style of offense?
Great question. And I think I'm going to give you a little bit of a basketball analogy and then bring it to the football side.
Cool.
You're well aware that there are teams out there in college basketball that are very structured. You know, they come down and they run sets. And those sets, I think of Michigan State, right? I mean, everything is a set. There's an offense, there's a system, and it's fairly black and white. Now, I'm not totally, you know, ingrained in college, but there are sets, and it's a little bit more structured. Then you have teams like North Carolina who come down, and it's very, you know, gray area, flow, you know, move around. The offense is kind of constantly in motion, and there's no real set structure to it. There are maybe some rules, but you know, it's much more of a fluid, artistic type of a deal. Well, the same can be said about football offenses. I don't think that people really realize the difference between some of these offenses and others. I think Josh Rosen fits perfectly with a system that is more black and white, more structured. Tell me the why. You know, I want to know why I'm reading this guy and why I'm manipulating that linebacker and who are we bracketing. Versus, I think, a Cliff Kingsbury offense, which was born from what Mike Leach did, not exactly the same, but born from that, which is the air raid system, has more gray area to it. You know, you kind of utilize the progression in order to attack grass, not necessarily because that guy's number one, two, or three. And Kyler grew up in that system, so he's more comfortable in a system that has more gray area, more fluidity to it, more artistic nature to it, whereas Josh wants a more structured offense. Think New Orleans. I do this because that happened. And because of that, I think that the fit for Kyler is better with Cliff Kingsbury. It has nothing to do with the fact that, you know, I don't think Josh is good enough, because I do. I think that he can flourish somewhere else, but I think that the fit would be better for him elsewhere.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Joel Klatt, lead college football analyst, of course, draft analyst as well for Fox Sports. You can hear him on Fox Sports Radio a week from tonight alongside Jake Glazer, Rob Stone, and Chris Spielman, our Fox Sports Radio NFL draft special. You mentioned Joey Bosa. I mean, you mentioned, excuse me, Nick Bosa. Joey Bosa, obviously. Joey's always told us Nick is actually better. Do you think he's better?
It's hard to say that because he hasn't been as dominant as what I feel like Joey was in college. Now, a lot of that was injury related. You know, even when he was playing 2 years ago, Doug, he had some knee tendonitis that kept him off the field on first and second down a lot of the time. So he was used more as a specialist. I feel like that hurt his numbers and his overall production. Now, when he was on the field, he was more disruptive than what Joey was in college. So he's more of a threat on the defensive side of the ball. Every single time he's rushing the passer, I feel like you got to hold your breath because there's a turnover waiting to happen. Either he's going to force the quarterback into a bad situation or bad decision, or he's going to get in there for a strip sack. He's as explosive a pass rusher as I've really graded in a long time, and he can do everything well. So if healthy, I think Nick has the potential to be better than Joey, but Joey was more productive, and I think a cleaner prospect coming out of Ohio State.
Is Nick far and away the best defense? Is it not close that he's the best pass rushing prospect?
He is the best pass rushing prospect. I'd say by, you know, maybe not a full wide margin, but by, you know, a decent amount. Now he's not far and away the best defensive prospect, because Quinnen Williams is also incredible on the interior. However, Quinnen Williams is so good, the defensive tackle from Alabama. I think those two guys are the two guys I would point to in this draft and say, if you had to put money on two players getting a gold jacket someday, those would be it. You know, if you're forced into that situation, they have that much potential. They have that much talent. They play hard. All the things that you would love from an NFL perspective, they can certainly do.
What about Josh Allen, right? Like, now he's more outside linebacker.
He's more of an edge player maybe than a defensive end per se, but he's certainly a pass rushing specialist. I tell you, what I was impressed with, Doug, was the fact that I didn't think he was going to be great in space as a stand-up 3-4 outside linebacker, but he went down to Mobile at the Senior Bowl, and I thought he acquitted himself quite nicely, covering some of the tight ends and even some of the slot backs out of the backfield. So I think this guy is going to find himself in a situation where he can be a disruptive force in the National Football League. I would call him, I hate to use the term poor man's, but he's kind of a poor man's Von Miller, athletic, explosive, long, learning how to play in space, not quite as what Von was coming out of Texas A&M, but he certainly has the potential to be one of the best pass rushers in the National Football League within 4 or 5 years.
You saw Hollywood Brown a lot, wide receiver, Oklahoma, only 5'9", 166 pounds, and again, kind of like Kyler Murray, right? Whereas you go back 5-6 years ago, and they're like, "Yeah, I don't see it." Is he strong enough, or is he good enough to be able to get the football in space and to be a traditional wide receiver in systems today?
Yeah, what I loved about Hollywood was the fact that it wasn't just straight line speed. He was great in tight windows, even over the middle of the field, and they used him all over the place. They used him in jet sweeps. They moved him into the slot. He would run little break routes over the slot. Sometimes he would run what's called a jerk route, which was clear everybody out, get him one-on-one with a safety, and then let him have a two-way go. And that two-way go was almost always a win for Oklahoma. Those are the style of routes that I think he's going to excel at the next level. When he gets healthy from this Liz Frank injury, I think he's going to explode on the NFL scene. Here's what I think. I think that he's some sort of a mixture between Tyreek Hill and DeSean Jackson, to be quite honest with you. And I think he's kind of DeSean Jackson without all the baggage, because he's a great kid. He's a hard worker, comes from the junior college ranks, goes to Oklahoma, head down, you know, great hands, all these different things. I think he could have a really explosive impact on his next team. It's just a matter of if he can get that foot healthy.
Mm. What about DK Metcalf? I mean, everybody freaks out about his size and strength and straight line speed. But, you know, like, look, as you and I both know, this is no different in any other sport. Just because you check a lot of physical boxes, you know, a lot of it's in your hips. A lot of it's the different fluidity. You got to actually catch the football. But, you know, it reminds me a little bit of David Boston. I know David Boston used artificial means to get that big, but he was never as good as he looked like he should be.
Yeah.
Is DK Metcalf just a physical freak, or can he actually be a great wide receiver in the NFL?
Yeah, I think he's more physical than he is great wide receiver. There's two things that you've got to do as a wide receiver in the National Football League, and these are non-negotiables, Doug. You've got to be able to create space, and then you've got to catch the ball consistently. And those are really the two things. You know, Bill Belichick talks about that a lot. And in order to create space, I believe that you need the ability to move quickly laterally, in and out of your break, sinking your hips, doing a lot of different things in order to create leverage and then separate away from that leverage. Here's the problem. When you look at his combine numbers, and I'm not big on combine numbers, but this, I think, will tell you a huge story about DK Metcalf. He was in the top, you know, 2, 3, 4 of all wide receivers when it came to straight line explosiveness. The 40, the broad jump, the vertical jump, the bench press, even if you wanted to throw that in there. And then as soon as they went lateral with the 3-cone drill or the pro shuttle, the 20-yard shuttle, he was in the bottom 3 of every wide receiver in the entire combine. To me, that's worrisome. He doesn't catch the ball consistently, and so I'm looking at it, and candidly, I think he's more flash than he is substance, you know. And granted, he looks amazing, and he can run by some defenders, and he made some incredible one-handed catches. But I want a guy that's going to be consistent, winning in space, creating that space for the quarterback. And so, candidly, I don't see it. For me, DK Metcalf is not in my top 50 prospects in this NFL draft. We're going on Instagram, he's in the top 5. But unfortunately, that doesn't win you rings.
I wish you'd ever say how you felt. That's next time you come on, I wish you'd say how you felt.
I can't help it, man. I mean, like,
listen, I love it.
You always are going to get me unfiltered.
Okay, the big uglies that never get talked about, suddenly, you know, Indy, obviously getting Andrew Luck healthy has changed them, but, you know, solidifying their offensive line through the draft, getting, you know, a guy where people are watching offensive line tape first time ever. Is Juwan Taylor that good? Like, he's most people. I know there's Jonah Williams as well, but he doesn't have nearly as high a grade. Juwan Taylor and Jonah Williams, are they good enough for these teams that have massive offensive line issues? Like the Arizona Cardinals, like, we're worried about their quarterback. Their line sucked last year.
Yeah.
How good is the line in terms of readiness to play, help, start right away?
It's okay. It's not a great offensive line draft. I think that my favorite of all the guys is a guy you actually didn't bring up named Andre Dillard from Washington State. And the reason is because, Doug, I think that offensive line is a bottom line position. Bottom line is, your guy blocked or not, right? You know, so it can look pretty sometimes, and some guys are nasty, and boy, look at this guy move and this or that. Bottom line is your guy blocked or not? And the term that always comes to the top of my mind when I'm watching Andre Dillard from Washington State is sticky, whether it's in pass protection, which he's certainly the cleanest pass protector in this draft, but even in the run blocking. He might not overpower guys, but they're always blocked. He's always covering up his man. And for that reason, I think he is a really tantalizing prospect, because I think he can solidify a tackle position virtually immediately for any organization. Now, Juwan Taylor, he's probably more talented. He's nastier. He's more powerful. He's better in the run game, in particular as a road grader, but he's got to get better in the pass protection side of things. Now, you got to understand, Andre Dillard had nearly 300 more pass sets last year than virtually any other offensive tackle in this draft. I mean, think about that, right? With the Mike Leach system, 300 more pass sets. And this guy was clean, I'm telling you. So you're getting a really good player if you select Andre Dillard. You know, Jonah Williams is good. I think he's more of a guard. He'll tell you he's going to play tackle, and he's the best tackle in the draft. I do believe that he should move down and become a guard, because he just doesn't flash that lateral quickness, that lateral agility that you need out on the outside like Dillard has.
Awesome stuff. Joel Klatt, check him out next Thursday evening, 8 o'clock Eastern time, along with Jay Glazer, Chris Spielman, and Rob Stone, our Fox Sports Radio NFL Draft Special. Joel, enjoy the weekend. I know you'll be prepping a bunch. Weather's good in Newport. We'll see you down at the beach.
You bet. Have a good one, bud.
All right, it's Joel Klatt joining us.